भगवते वासुदेवाय देहादिभिर् दैवतन्त्राय आत्मना सुखमीहतः दुःखात्यायं च निःशास्य क्रिया मोघा कृता कृता The living entity tries to achieve happiness and rid himself of the causes of distress. But because the various bodies of the living entities are under the full control of material nature, all his plans in different bodies, one after another, are ultimately baffled. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Because the materialist is in gross ignorance of how the laws of material nature act upon him as a result of his fruitive activity, he mistakenly plans to enjoy bodily comfort in the human form of life through so-called economic development, through pious activities for elevation to the higher planetary systems, and in many other ways. But factually, he becomes a victim of the reactions of his fruitive activities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated as the Super Soul within the cores of the hearts of all living entities. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto mathasmitir jnanam apohanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart. From me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The desires and activities of the living being are observed by the Super Soul, who is the Upadrasta, the overseer, and who orders material nature to fulfill the various desires of the living being. As clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara sarvabhutanam hriddesher junatishtati Brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. The Lord is situated in everyone's heart. And as one desires, the Lord gives one various types of bodies, which are like machines. Riding on such a machine, the living entity wanders throughout the universe under the control of material nature and its modes. Thus, the living being is not at all free to act, but is fully under the control of material nature, which is fully under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As soon as a living entity is victimized by material desires to lord it over material nature, he is subjected to the control of material nature, which is supervised by the Supreme Soul. The result is that one again and again makes plans and is baffled. But as foolish as he is, he cannot see the cause of his bafflement. This cause is distinctly stated in Bhagavad Gita. Because one has not surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he must work under the control of material nature and its stringent laws. Daivihesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. The only means of becoming free from this entanglement is to surrender to the Supreme Lord. In the human form of life, the living entity must accept this instruction from the Supreme Person, Krishna. Sarvadharman purityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Do not plan to achieve happiness and drive away distress. You will never be successful. Simply surrender unto me. Unfortunately, however, the living entity does not accept the Supreme Lord's clearly stated instructions from Bhagavad Gita, and thus he becomes a perpetual captive of the laws of material nature. Yajyarthat kamanon yatra lokomam karma bandhanaha. If one does not act for the satisfaction of Krishna, who is known as Vishnu or Yajna, he must be entangled in the reactions of fruitive activities. These reactions are called papa and punya, sinful and pious. By pious activities, one is elevated to the higher planetary systems, and by impious activities, one is degraded to lower species of life, in which he is punished by the laws of nature. In the lower species of life, there is an evolutionary process, and when the term of the living entity's imprisonment or punishment in the lower species is finished, he is again offered a human form and given a chance to decide for himself which way he should plan. If he again misses the opportunity, he is again put in the cycle of birth and death, going sometimes higher and sometimes lower, turning on the samsara chakra, the wheel of material existence. As a wheel sometimes goes up and sometimes comes down, the stringent laws of material nature make the living entity in material existence sometimes happy and sometimes distressed. How he suffers in the cycle of happiness and distress is described in the next verse. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, entitled The Behavior of a Perfect Person, Text 30. Prahlad Maharaj, who is the king of the Daityas, is in this chapter traveling around the world seeking the association of saintly people. His father he had his armies travel around the world to find the same people, specifically to destroy them, to subjugate them. Anyone who was not willing to accept him as the supreme in their lives was his enemy. Everything was very black and white. There was little in between. Either you surrender to him, you do his will, you say what he wants you to say, you do what he wants you to do. If so, you become his friend. If at any time you decide to act independently of Hiranyakashipu, you become his enemy. And he had a very simple formula of how to deal with his enemies. Subjugate them, control them. If they have any inclination to act out of their control, they must be destroyed. So he slaughtered cows. He killed Brahmins. He destroyed ashrams, burned them with fire, desecrated them. Because he knew that devotion to Vishnu could empower people to rise above him. and therefore his ultimate enemy was Vishnu. His brother, Hiranyaksha, had almost equal strength to him. No one dared to challenge Hiranyaksha. On behalf of his brother, Hiranyaksha was doing like a universal yatra. He was traveling from planet to planet. And wherever he went, either you surrender to Hiranyakashipu or you die. He either destroyed them or they surrendered. And no one can stand before him. He went to Varuna. Varuna said, I'm an old man, I can't fight with you. But there is someone who wants to fight with you. And he directed him to Varahadev, who was Vishnu himself. When the Lord wants to humiliate someone, he really knows how to do it. Here is Hiranyaksha. He has Indra down to his knees. He has all the devatas on their knees just praising him, begging for mercy from him. The greatest warriors, the greatest devatas. And now here he is fighting with, of all people, a boar, which is a wild pig. Yes. And although he has his mighty weapons and his armor, he's ultimately killed by the hoof of a boar. Yes. Now, if you understand he's Vishnu, then it's glorious. But if you're an atheist like Hiranyaksha and his colleagues, not a very glorious death. It's like in World War II. Perhaps the most heroic, one of definitely the greatest, most heroic generals of the American Army. He was a person who actually went in the front lines with his soldiers and fought some of the most bloody battles. And he helped to lead victory in World War II in some of the worst battles. Risked his life constantly. And after they won the war, he went on a hunting excursion just for fun, and accidentally his gun went off and shot him and he died. Hare Krishna. Not a very glorious death for a Kshatriya. So Hiranyaksha was killed by this boar. Now Hiranyakashipu understood this is Vishnu. He is the only person that could stop me. And Hiranyakashipu understood the scriptures. He was a learned scholar. He was a mystic yogi. He had everything except devotion. We read where he's preaching to his relatives after Hiranyaksha died. He's speaking very, very powerful philosophy. In fact, even great acharyas to this day, millions of years later, quote him. They tell the same stories he tells. Because it was just so shastric, it was so precise, it was so logical, it was so real about the difference between the body and the soul. So he knew that if you perform yajna, this isn't Satya Yuga. If you do meditation, if you perform yajna, you attract Vishnu's powers. So what did he do? He He made law, no yajna, no meditation, no pious activities. He was so powerful. He had so much control over the universe that he actually was changing the laws of karma. Where if you do sinful activities, you get rewarded with good results. And if you do pious activities, you have to suffer miserably. This was his intention. And he really believed he could do it. So much arrogance. So yes, he and his armies were hunting for saintly person to either make them surrender or die. And here is his son Prahlad roaming around the world looking for the same saintly people with the desire to surrender to them, to learn from them, to be blessed by them. Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu are very, very personified in the contrast between material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. They are both epitomes of the principle. Hiranyakashipu, I am the controller, everything is mine. I am independent. And Prahlad, I am nothing. I'm just the insignificant servant of the servant of the servant of my Guru Maharaj. Nothing is mine, everything is Krishna's. And I'm simply his servant, servant of the servant of his servants. And when we evaluate our own life and we inspect our own motivations, we can see, are they leaning toward Hiranyakashipu's side or Prahlad's side? Hiranyakashipu wanted to destroy his enemies. Prahlad wanted his enemies to get liberation. Hiranyakashipu was not respectful to anyone. Prahlad was respectful to everyone. Hiranyakashipu always boasted, I am the doer. Prahlad gave all credit to his guru and Krishna, never took any credit for anything, even when he was king. Hiranyakashipu wanted to show his might in front of others, his intelligence, his strength, his abilities, his accomplishments. Prahlad just wanted to glorify others and seek their blessings. So every one of our actions, every one of our decisions is either going to be leaning toward Hiranyakashipu's side or Prahlad's side. A devotee takes Prahlad, Mahajano yena gatasapam, follows in the footsteps of Mahajans like Prahlad. There's a beautiful purport where Srila Prabhupada explains that every class of human beings has their own set of Mahajans that they are following in the footsteps of. There are Bollywood Mahajans. There are cricket player Mahajans. There are scientist Mahajans. There are industrialist and businessman Mahajans. There are politician Mahajans. Mahatsevam dwaram ahurvam uptestamo dwaram yoshita sangvi sangam. We follow in the footsteps of saintly people. The doors to liberation are open. If we just seek out the association and want to serve great souls, the doors to the highest perfections are open wide. But if we seek the association or try to follow the lead or the example of materialistic people, then we glide down into ignorance. It is inevitable. In many ways, everything about our destiny is very much determined by who we model our lives after. Everyone models their life after someone or some people. We could be devotees, and we could be very proud of being devotees, but we may very much be inclined toward the spirit of Hiranyakashipu. You can be a temple president. You could be a Sankirtan leader. You could be a GBC. You could be a guru. You could be anything. If you want to control, that is Hiranyakashipu's mood. If you want to control with your false ego, Prahlad, he was king. As a king, he had to control. But he always did it in a spirit of real, genuine service. So here is Prahlad, the great king, traveling around, looking for saintly people. And if you're really looking for something, then you can recognize it when it comes. If you're sincere. Krishna reveals according to our consciousness. Jejatamam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyam. As you surrender to me, I reveal myself accordingly. That means Krishna speaking about how he reveals himself accordingly personally and directly, but also through others and through material nature. If you're surrendering to Krishna, you see Krishna everywhere. You see Krishna teaching you a good lesson of how to be a devotee everywhere. And if you're seeking something else, your own ulterior motives, your own agenda, then you're going to see that. So Prahlad was really looking for saintly people. Therefore, Krishna was revealing in his heart who saintly people really were. And the most strange type of person he happened to come upon. This person who was just laying, practically naked, just laying on the ground, covered with dirt and dust. It looked like he hadn't even stood up in a long time. And he was just laying there, like an animal. Most political people would say, why don't you get a job? You're young, you're strong, you're wasting your life just laying there. Hare Krishna. But Prahlad, he was looking for a saintly person, and therefore he detected something. He's laying on the ground. He doesn't even get up to look for something to eat. Whether it's raining or snowing or whatever's happening, he doesn't even get up to find a covering for himself. I mean, some people, you know, they detach themselves from the world and they live in a cave to protect themselves from the burning sun, from the rains, from the elements. But this person didn't even go into a cave. He just laid on the ground. Whatever happened, didn't matter. Now, from a material perspective, he was the ultimate example of a lazy man. Yes? But Prahlad detected that he was kind of heavy set. He wasn't skinny. He was a little fatty. Now, most of us, we would just think a lazy person, you know, by his actions. But he saw the fact that he's a little fatty means Krishna's providing for him, even despite him just laying here all the time. So he must be a saintly person. That was his logical deduction. Because he was looking for saintly people, Krishna was revealing who was saintly to him. Many examples. Shukadeva Goswami, he was the topmost saintly person. When he was wandering through the forest, people thought he was a madman. Young children were making fun of him. They were throwing things at him. They were ridiculing him. They were just criticizing him. They thought he was a joke. Yes? Because they weren't lurking for a saintly person. They were in the bodily concept. They saw him in the bodily concept, and they just had no respect at all. But as soon as he came to the bank of the Ganga, all the greatest saints and rishis from the universe were assembled. They all stood up and honored him. Because these men were looking for the essence. They were saragrahi. So what you're looking for, Krishna reveals to you everywhere. If you really want to find fault in someone, Krishna's going to reveal faults that even aren't even there. If you want to believe something, even if there's no evidence at all, you'll believe it because you want to. Shishupal, he wasn't just manufacturing criticisms of Krishna. He was actually seeing these things. He actually believed it. Yes, he really believed that Krishna was I can't even say what he was believing. He believed that Krishna was really a bad person. And he was constantly extolling Krishna's faults. And the amazing thing is all those people around Shishupal were convinced of everything he said. It's not that they were thinking, oh, this Shishupal just has some kind of an ego trip. Or this Shishupal, he's in Maya. His associates believed him. He convinced all of them about Krishna's faults. Even other kings that were willing to fight with him against Krishna. So this is the principle. You'll see the eyes through the lens of your motivations. Everyone sees the world differently. Yes? Like, in Kashmir, there's so much conflict. Now, Indian Hindus are seeing through a certain lens. But then the Islamic extremists are seeing through another lens. And I don't believe they're just thinking we're just making these things up. They believe these things. They see these things. Who's right? Yes. Second World War, the people who were fighting under Hitler really believed what he was saying is true. He believed that certain minorities were so dangerous to the earth that they must be killed, and they were killing them by the millions. But other people didn't see, they saw exactly the opposite. It was cold-blooded murder. But they were seeing that it was just a necessary ecological, social purification. That's what they were thinking. caste Brahmins, they really thought that Haridas Thakur was just a malecha that was destroying the Vedic culture by his actions. They really believed it, many of them. Whereas the Vaishnavas and the innocent people, they saw him as the greatest saint, the very crest jewel of the Vedic culture. So very much we see things according to our conditioning, according to our motives. So Prahlad is humbly inquiring from this avaduta about the truths of, about the highest truths of life. And here, the avaduta is explaining how in his observation of the world, the living entity tries to achieve happiness and rid himself of the causes of distress, but because of the various bodies of the living entities are under the full control of material nature, all his plans in different bodies, one after another, are ultimately baffled. Many years before, Sri Prahlad Maharaj spoke the same principle in his prayers. So people are, due to maya sukaya, due to being under the influence of maya, they are making so many grand plans to try to alleviate distress and solve problems. But unless they understand how things really work, the solutions that they create create bigger problems than the original problem. And what a prophecy that was. Look at the world today. Nobody knows what to do with the problems we've created. And they're all created by the manufacturing of things that we enjoy and that we feel are solutions to problems. Yes? Wars over oil, and what to speak of what the future will be if we don't change our consciousness. A whole economic situation is based on oil. Oil is becoming scarcer. You have to dig deeper because it's becoming, it's not so easy to get. At one time, America had so much oil. Now so much of it has been exhausted. Now they're depending on the Middle East. And the Middle East, you know, they have their own ideologies. Dependent. Otherwise, economic collapse. And in the process of consuming all these oils, the sky is being polluted, the oceans, the rivers, the lakes, the land. So global warming. Very difficult. How to solve a problem like this? All because, you know, we wanted, instead of lighting a lantern, we wanted to solve the problem and just make a switch and the lights go on. Instead of riding an ox cart, we wanted a tractor. Solve the problem. But actually, with the ox carts, everyone was living pretty peaceful lives. Now, so many cars, so many people jamming into the trains, people evacuating the villages and coming to cities, 15 million people in the city of Bombay. And it was probably designed for about 1 million. And now, you know, their progress is just building one bridge on top of another. No matter how many bridges or flyovers, they call them flyovers, but I don't see anybody flying over during the rush hours. They're crawlovers. People are just crawling over them. I have seen. We have these big Mercedes, BMWs, Toyotas, Hindustani motor vehicles with big engines. And I see during the traffic, the rats are moving faster than us. And we're sitting with a horn. And the rats are smiling, going, very difficult. So much anxiety, son. Just breathing in this city is like smoking 2 packages of cigarettes every day, according to health surveys. So much health problems, everything else. Prahlad Maharaj was correct. That the solutions we make to problems, if they are not in perspective of the holistic truth, the tattvas of what is the jiva, what is the paramatma, and what is prakriti, what is material nature. Unless we understand these principles and how they work with one another, then all of our so-called solutions become serious problems. So here the Avadhuta is explaining how Prahlad, he spoke the same thing. Now interesting, this Avadhuta is basically saying exactly the same thing that Prahlad said when he was 5 years old. Now just see the quality of Prahlad. Prahlad didn't tell him after hearing this, "I already know that." Just, you know, look a few chapters earlier in the Bhagavatam, and I already said the same thing. I know these things. In fact, I said it even better than you. More people quote me than you. But this is the nature of a great soul. Even though he knows it, he's eager to hear. Eager to hear. If a new devotee tells us, is giving a class, and a senior devotee's there, and the new devotee says, "You're not this body. Dehinosmin yata dehi." Some people will sit there and think, "I know that." In fact, I taught him that when he was a bhakta. But Srila Prabhupada would sit and ask his own disciples to give class. And they would say, "Dehinosmin yata dehi," and Prabhupada was, yes, this is very important. He was eager to hear. Because it's Krishna's words, it's the truth. He was eager to hear from his own disciples. There are stories where new devotees who were just devotees for a couple months, Prabhupada would say, "You give class." And he would really enjoy listening to their class. This is the quality of a great personality. Is we're eager for the truth. But the false ego gets in the way.
great souls are great according to how they conquer the false ego.
So Prahlad is hearing the same things that he heard from his guru, the same things that he spoke when he was just a little child. Now he's an adult, he's a king. But he's listening attentively, and he's feeling himself being enlightened and purified by hearing this message. Why? Because he was looking for Krishna. He was looking for truth, and therefore he was finding it. And it was exciting. It was stimulating. It was ecstatic. He wasn't looking to prove himself. He was not the center. Krishna was the center. When Krishna becomes the center, everything becomes extraordinary. When we make ourselves the center, we just block so many opportunities, which are always coming. So what does it mean to be a Vaishnav? These are some of the qualities that are fundamental, foundational to being a Vaishnav. So yes, the basis of material existence is spoken in this one little verse. People are trying to alleviate the cause of distress and trying to seek happiness. Through means, without understanding how material nature is working. And therefore, they are baffled again and again and again. Everyone is baffled. Daiviheshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mamaivam yepapadyante mayam etatarantite. Krishna tells it so clearly. This material nature, which is constituted by these three modes of nature, the gunas, is very difficult to overcome. Sattva guna, raja guna, tama guna, activated by time, are so powerful. Maya is the Lord's external potency. Just as Srimati Radharani, the internal potency, the pleasure potency, conquers Krishna. Yes, we read about how Srimati Radharani conquers Krishna by the power of her love. She is the pleasure potency of the internal power of the Lord. Well, she is manifested in material nature as Maya. I mean, if she has the power to conquer Krishna, what is our position? Mamayavam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatha. We're just infinitesimal little sparks of Krishna. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yovidati kamam. That there is one supreme and there are unlimited eternals, eternal souls, and they are always subordinate to the one supreme soul. So when the spiritual energy conquers Krishna, who is the controller of all controllers, Mahavishnu is, just by exhaling, the entire cosmic manifestation comes. And then he inhales, everything is destroyed. Now who can control him? And he's doing all of it in yoga nidra. He's in a divine sleep state. Now, what do you accomplish when you sleep?
Amazing. And the cause of Mahavishnu, the cause of all causes, Sarva Karana Karanam, is Krishna.
And he's conquered by the love of Sri Radha, the internal pleasure potency, Ladini Shakti.
And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed to Parvati, you are my Maya, you are the Maya energy. You are Radharani in this field of material energy. So if this energy can conquer Krishna, what is our position?
Therefore, Krishna tells,
he is never under the influence of Maya. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachar. He's always on the spiritual platform, supreme. This material nature is working under my direction. And therefore, unless you surrender to me, you will be baffled. You will be defeated in due course of time. And Maya is so expert. If she really wants to defeat you, she'll make you think that you're winning. Yes? That's what she does. It's like these gambling houses, the casinos in Las Vegas and Reno and all these places, Atlantic City. The people who run them, when they see someone winning a lot of money, which means they're winning money from them, they're happy. They're actually really excited when they see someone winning money, because they know that the odds are always in their favor. That's the way the whole gambling house is built. The odds are always in their favor. They cannot lose. It's set up that way. And the more you win, the more you become addicted to the intoxicating experience of winning something cheap and quick. It's really a sense gratification. It's an intense sense gratification. Just winning a lot, quick and easy. You just put your money down and someone, you know, throws a ball on a wheel and all of a sudden it stops and you have $100,000. May have taken you years to make that, you know, just struggling in the marketplace and working. Yes? But the taste of that, Maya, it's the mode of passion. It's Rajaguna. That's really what's happening. Rajaguna is, as you win, you're just being devoured by Rajaguna. And then you're addicted to that. I won once, that means I could win again. Yes? And then you win a second time. Ah. And then you win a third time. Ah. And then you lose, and you think, I've won three times. Then you lose 100 times, but you're still thinking, well, I won three times. Until you lose everything. So they like to see you win. It's like a fisherman. You know, the fisherman likes to see the fish eating the worm and thinking, and then the fish starts, after eating the worm, somebody's saying, you know, there's a hook in there and everything. He says, well, look, I'm swimming away. He can't get me. And he's swimming away, swimming away, swimming away, saying, see, I ate it and I'm still swimming away. Why should I listen to these Hare Krishna people? And the more he swims away, the fisherman's happier, because as he's swimming away, he's swallowing deeper, 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 till it's really deep. And then when it's really deep and the fish really thinks I got away with it, then it's finished. So that's what happens. material nature. We try to enjoy, we become addicted to that enjoyment, and then we become trapped. We try to solve our problems, but in the process, we're cast into a fever of material entanglement. Now, we're talking about gambling houses. But factually, the entire material existence is created exactly the same way. Gambling houses, I don't advise you go there. You could just listen. And the good ones, it's not like a sleazy, dirty place with all these guys with, you know, long mustaches and greasy hair just going, rah. They spend billions of dollars on these rooms. They're the most beautiful places you can imagine. They have wonderful chandeliers and marble walls and gold leaf columns, and people are dressed really nice. You can't go in unless you're dressed really, really nice and the good ones. And ladies are in nightgowns and they have their little glasses. And the men are, you know, famous people all over the world you'll see there. Really looks prestigious. Very extremely opulent. Some of the most opulent places in the world. They put more money on making casinos opulent than they do temples and churches. Yes? So you go in and you think, God, this is high class. This is wonderful to see everything about it, the music playing. Sometimes they have the famous bands playing, and you're just thinking, this is I went to visit my aunt a few years ago, my auntie, as you would say, and she was in the outskirts of Las Vegas, and I drove by. Gary took me, and the amazing thing is how many Indians were there. Amazing. I saw dozens of ladies with expensive saris going into the casinos. Of course, the men weren't wearing dhotis. Amazing. And when you go in and you hear the music and you smell the fragrances and you see the just spectacular wealth of chandeliers and marbles and jewels and the kinds of people and how they dress, you think, I am in Vaikuntha. That's the illusion. And even a devotee would probably think that way if he didn't really chant good rounds that morning. But it's all orchestrated just to make you lose. That's all. Everything is orchestrated meticulously just to baffle you, bewilder you, and exploit you. And that's exactly what will happen. The more you win, the more you're going to be exploited. If you lose the first time, you try again and again, you say, let's get out of here, there's no hope. But if you win a few times, it's addicting. Very dangerous. The whole material nature is created just like that. It's like a model. Material nature, all the glamour, all the beauty Everything around is actually created for the purpose of exploiting you, bewildering you, or as Srila Prabhupada is saying, baffling you. There's suffering here. But all around we're seeing so many ways to try to resolve the suffering. And every single way except surrendering to Krishna is only meant to further entangle you. Therefore, Krishna says it very plainly, Daivi Hyeshu Gunamayi, Mama Maya Duratyaya, that this material nature with these three modes is very difficult to only overcome. Only if you surrender to me can you cross beyond it. There's no other solution. And Srila Prabhupada in this purport gives an amazing translation to Sarva Dharman Purityajya, Mame Kam Sharanam Braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishim sachim asuja. The literal translation is abandon all varieties of religion, dharma, and just surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. But Srila Prabhupada, in his translation, gives a purport. What does this abandon all varieties of religion mean? Prabhupada translates, do not plan to achieve happiness and drive away distress. You will never be successful. This is abandon all varieties of religion. Do not plan to achieve happiness and drive away distress. You will never. Krishna doesn't say you will not. Krishna says you will never be successful. Simply surrender unto me. So to keep our faith in the fallible soldiers of material manipulation is the cause of repeated birth and death. Srila Prabhupada often really challenged material energy. And he challenged our faith in material energy. Sometimes when Prabhupada, with the Bhaktivedanta Institute or his own morning walks, he would really challenge material scientists. And sometimes devotees were thinking, you know, why Prabhupada so much like this? Srila Prabhupada, in essence, he once explained his purpose. He said, whether they're right or wrong in their findings, they cannot help you to be free from birth, old age, disease, and death. And that's the basic foundational problem of material of life, birth, old age, disease, and death. They have no clue of how to resolve that problem. So even if they may be technically right or wrong, this or that or this or that, if you put your faith in that, you'll never solve the problem. You have to put your faith in the words of God. Now, if a scientist has faith in the word of God and is using scientific technology and scientific experimentation and scientific, you know, discoveries to help people to actually solve the real problems of life, then that's wonderful. But unfortunately, when they're making false promises that in the future we will make things better, when they don't even know what the real problem is, birth, old age, disease, and death, and they distract us from our faith in God unless we're very careful. Daivi Yeshu Guna Mami Maya Maya. That Krishna says that unless you surrender to me, you cannot cross beyond the problems of life. You don't even know what the problem is. So Srila Prabhupada was very, very forceful and very strong to keep our consciousness focused on the absolute truth that is spoken by Bhagavan, by Krishna. If you take Bhagavad Gita and accept it as truth, then through business, through science, through politics, through education, you can use all these technologies, all these skills, all of the findings, and use it for the ultimate purpose of really solving the real problems of life. But unless we accept the Bhagavad Gita, the truth of Bhagavad Gita, and build whatever we're developing on that foundation, then we're just in the gambling house, the casino of Maya. It's amazing. I even saw a casino named Maya. And it's just so obvious. But people don't understand. But there's a simple solution. Krishna is non-different than his name. We must, if we just have faith that Krishna is our ultimate shelter, Sri Krishna Sharanam Mam, Krishna is our real shelter. Krishna is our only shelter. And Krishna has manifest himself within his name. Srila Prabhupada tells that he said 50 years before, when he was a grihastha, he had a young son, and he was walking down the street with his son, and his son looked up and said, "Father, why is the moon following us wherever we go?" And then they walked a few blocks down the road, and the son said, "Look, the moon is still following us." Then they walked somewhere else, and then the son said, "The moon is still with us. The moon is following us everywhere we go, Father." And Srila Prabhupada, he liked that story a lot. He said, "The moon is just a little planet in this world. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. He follows us everywhere. If the moon can follow us, or the sun can follow us wherever we go, Krishna is the source of the sun and the moon. In fact, the moon and the sun are just the eyes of the Lord, giving us vision as well as seeing us. We can't see without the light of the sun. And we are also being seen through the light of the sun. But we can't recognize Krishna being with us unless we are in the proper state of consciousness. And Krishna makes himself accessible always to be there to help us, to guide us, to save us in the form of his name whenever we chant and wherever we chant sincerely. Much louder, please. What is the use of so many devotees if you cannot fill the world with the sound of the heart? good decibels. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, wonderful description of casino. We are seeing a spiritual casino here in Radha Gopinath Mandir, such a wonderful temple. Everybody wants to come and see this place. But, you know, Bhagavatam's asking us to, we should regularly hear Nashta Prayesu Abhadresu, we should come here. People come here, many people have come from different places to attend this class of yours. People come for 2 hours, 3 hours, they give their time. After hearing this class, or after in the upcountry here, and when we go back after hearing so many classes for last so many years, I don't feel there is any change in the consciousness that we get involved again in the same activity again and again. Why this is happening so?
Thank you, Mahaprabhu, for carrying on your tradition. It is quite obvious why it happens, because we have chronic conditioning. We have long-standing habits that may have been cultivated for many, many, many births. So we have these inclinations. But we always have free will. Krishna consciousness can be an extremely gradual process, or it could be a very rapid process. Human life is meant for austerity. Austerity means to make the right choices. That's all. Austerity doesn't mean going to the peaks of the mountains and the Himalayas and submerging yourself for 6 months in the water of the Ganges. Real austerity is just making the right choices. Even in Bombay, you could make more spiritual progress in Bombay if you just make the right choices. So we learn, and we see that we have these habits, we have these conditionings, and just by coming regularly and trying to become more pious and trying to apply bhakti to our lives, we'll make gradual progress. But to the extent we really refrain from those activities that entangle us in material nature, and we really take shelter of the holy name and the Srimad Bhagavatam and the association of devotees and worship the deities and doing devotional service, we will make very, very fast advancement. So that is our choice. But we should encourage anybody on whatever level that they're just taking something of Krishna consciousness. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells the highest truth, to surrender to me. But he also says, if you can't do that, then, you know, give some donation. Yes? If you can't always remember me, he gives various levels to come up. So most important thing is we never give up. And some of the brahmacharis, they are literally giving everything. They have nothing except Krishna. But that's a rare thing. But even brahmacharis, sometimes they, even some of their habits, their personality habits, getting angry and things like that, still there. But by right means and humble service, they'll gradually become purified of that. And for grihastas, you know, we have our home. The more we come to the temple, the more we invite sadhus to our homes, the more we're really trying to Krishnize our homes, the more our homes become Vaikuntha. Otherwise, the conditioning is our home is just a place of material enjoyment. So by our free will, we have to transform the environment of our homes. We have to transform the qualities of our relationships. We have to transform the qualities of our activities. Even if the inclination is there, tapasya means making the right choice. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
Ananda Vrindavan Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, as you have said that in the class, that this material nature is baffling us again and again and again. So I'll give my own hardcore experience as well as realization also. That many of the devotees, they come to us, specifically they come to me, and they make it very clear about it that I would like to accept, I want to plan my life in a nice way, that at the right time I wanted to accept a vanprastha life and give my 100% commitment to Krishna consciousness. I'm talking on a finance way. So definitely they planned it, but because they wanted to get it as quick as it can so that they can give 100% commitment to Krishna consciousness, so little bit here and there we have to take some risk so that everything goes all right at the right time, they can come and 100% give commitment. But material nature, as you said, it baffles. The way the crisis is right now, it is there. Economical, everything has been shackled. In that situation, what happens is that same devotee, Maharaj, instead of considering as a Krishna's view and considering as a Krishna's choice, they don't take it on that basis. Then they say that, oh, my figure is not sufficient enough to accept vanprastha life. I would like to work more now. And I want to hang on to more working so that my figure, I'm able to reach it. I used to tell them, oh, just accept it. It's Krishna's will and wish. And how can you give a guarantee that after some point of time, the same crisis will not come again? Just accept it and take it as a Krishna's mercy and have a simple life. But it is extremely difficult to make it convince. And the sad point of it is they again go on working in the same way again and again, means more and more years in the same schedule. By that time, the death is coming nearer. They're missing the bus. In that situation, Maharaj, what should we tell to that devotee to make it very forcefully to see to it that whatever Krishna wants, accept it and get out from this mess and keep 100% commitment to Krishna consciousness?
I cannot say it better than you just did. He is a stock consultant, so he knows the frailties of human insecurities. But the problem is, (clears throat) too much trying to find security through material adjustments. We have to have faith that the real security is in taking shelter of Krishna. The Shastras and the Acharyas show how Krishna's feeding the elephants, who eat hundreds of kilos a day, and he's feeding the ants, who's just eating some grains a day. Yes, he's supplying for all of them. He's supplying for all the trees. Why will he not supply for a devotee who surrenders his life for her life? Perhaps Krishna's not letting you get to that figure in the bank account that you want, because he was testing, do you trust me or do you trust your bank account? And bank account, these days your bank may go out of business. Your investment may be nothing tomorrow. So many people are losing billions and billions of dollars in security, in safe investments, and then the investment's gone. Yes? It's happening everywhere. Is there any real security in that? And even if you somehow or other are just on the verge of getting that figure in your bank balance, and then, you know, somebody in Islamabad presses a button. And you're thinking, but I'm almost there. And just, Krishna, just give me another few months and I'll have the right amount in my balance. Then I'll surrender. Yes. Padam padam yadvi padam natesha. It's really amazing. This material world is a very dangerous place. Where is there not wars? For long. Even when Bhrigupati Prabhu and Trinakarta Prabhu and we were growing up in the 1950s and 60s in America, America was at its peak of economic development, prosperity, power in the world. But still, there was always wars. Our parents were in World War II. Then when we were young, there was the Korean War. Then when we were teenagers, there was the Vietnam War. Yes? And hundreds and thousands of young people who cared nothing about politics and nothing about the war were forced by the military to go to Vietnam and fight in the jungles with mosquitoes and snakes and people shooting at you and dropping bombs at you and guerrilla warfare. People just brought up in a suburb or in a city just trying to mind their own business, and they get a draft notice, go. People's children being killed. Yes? India, three wars since independence. Material world, even the safest, best countries are vulnerable to be attacked. That's the nature of material existence. It's always been like this, the conquerors and the conquered. Jiva, jiva, sajivanam. It's the nature of this place. And yet we're thinking, if I have a little bank balance, I'll be safe. Even the wealthiest people in the world, some little enemy
just somehow or other gets into their body from somewhere and they get cancer and it's incurable and they're howling and screaming in pain and nothing and no one can help them. It happens all the time. Why should we depend on material arrangements? The house is on fire. And we're thinking, let me just make this arrangement and this arrangement, then I'll go out. And the firemen are saying, get out now, come, come, come. So we have to take seriously. Yes, it is the responsibility of grihasthas to maintain financially their family. It is a responsibility. It is a duty to God to do that. But even in grihastha life, even though we're doing our duty, we can't take shelter in these things. We have to understand this is my duty. I'm trying my best to financially maintain and support and give security to the family. But essentially, only Krishna can give me shelter. And when we come to a certain stage in life, before death actually comes, we want to, okay, Krishna, I've done this. Other people can do it now. I'm yours. But the story of Kailash, there's always, Maya will always provide a reason why it's not the right time. But the only time we have is now. So according to our varna, according to our ashram, according to our particular stage in life we are, we should be surrendering according to our duties now. Does that answer your question? I gave a very small purport to what, to the sutras you already presented to us. But we should end here because it is becoming late. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.